Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Graham Rowntree has been announced as the new coach of Munster Rugby.
That was such a big momentum changer for me.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
8:13, you're very welcome back. You finished Liverpool 2, Villarreal 0 in the first leg of their Champions League semi-final last night. Manchester City 4-3 up in the other semi-final as both teams now head to Spain next week. Graeme Hunter is with us on the line. Graeme, good morning to you.
Hello.
Couple of nervous Liverpool fans coming in touch with us this morning via the text message machine. Should they be nervous? Should they be a little bit cautious of what's about to come next week?
Is this a typical media technique? Have you invented these nervous Anfield fans?
They do not exist. You texted this in yourself to create some sort of a narrative here.
Liverpool need to score first on Tuesday. This tie is far from over, says Stephen.
Nerves just seem to be completely misplaced. Liverpool went into the tie not only distinctly the better 11 and the better squad, but with power play mentality, a tempest tempo football allied to all their good coaching, allied to their physical and aerial advantage over Villarreal. And from that, it was easy to juice. If I've been covering Villarreal, obviously in general for 20 years, but this season I've been the correspondent for UEFA for them. And one of the big things about the Arsenal semi-final win last year, the final in Danzig where they beat Manchester United, and then the majority of the four games against Bayern Munich and Juventus. None of those teams played at the relentless pace, either with the ball or without the ball, as Liverpool exampled last night. I think Liverpool fans, the real ones, not these invented nervous ones, will say that, for example, compared to the Merseyside derby, Liverpool found an edge in almost everything that they did last night. They found more space. They found Villarreal probably slower to the breakdown, to any second ball, than they had Everton, which was what I think it was the same scoreline, but probably a little bit more constipated. What you would say about Liverpool is that if they mirror that level of performance, never mind the goals scored in the Madrigal, it's really difficult to see them losing even 2-0 and going to extra time. Now, that is not to take away from Villarreal that, number one, on their home patch, where they will play differently, and I don't mean in terms of performance level, they will play positionally differently. They'll probably play a 4-3-3. It's imperative that Gerard Moreno isn't simply fit to get on the pitch, but match fit. There's a possibility of that. He was rested last night from the bench, even just as a precaution, because he's that important. But the absolute key factor is that as good as Liverpool were, and there's not a millimetre of me trying to strip credit from them, because I thought they were extremely impressive, extremely relentless last night. A minor break in the deflection of the Stupinian. Villarreal played really badly. Villarreal played beneath their par. People who criticise them for being ultra-defensive, they couldn't get out. They couldn't. I think the plan that Emery admitted he came up with, which was Chukwueze as a second striker with Danjuma rather than Chukwueze wide, 4-4-2 to try and not be overcome in midfield and to put the ball long and behind Liverpool. It never looked close to being right. They never really altered it. Emery's plans have been a real factor of how they've progressed in Europe over the last two seasons in two different competitions. And therefore, it was a deeply under-par night from Villarreal. And thus, they escape only 2-0. Last time they were at Anfield, they were pumped 3-0 and knocked out of a semi-final. The Barca game is an example of what even a leading Spanish side who are off form can receive at Anfield. So I think 2-0 is going to eventually prove definitive. But Villarreal were massively under par last night. And I think the minimum we can all expect is in the Madrigal next week. I'll be there. It'll be much more entertaining. It'll be more of a contest.
Mm. It's interesting then if we kind of grandfather Liverpool into the final here. Granted, it may not be 100% assured just yet. We were having a bit of a debate yesterday about, you know, the certainty that Manchester City are definitely the team that Liverpool don't want to get in the final. What's your take on that? Of course, Manchester City are a better squad than Real Madrid and probably a better team. But is there something a little bit about the pure stubbornness of Ancelotti and his players to just not go away, to just completely exist in a game, even if it looks like they're second best, that could cause Liverpool potentially more problems in a Champions League final?
I think you're asking me to project into both the kind of personality of Klopp and his players and the football analytics side, which is just a big jump from here in Barcelona in my kitchen. But to be honest with you, one thing I've learned in my visits to the training ground there, to the various interviews I've done one-on-one with Liverpool players and staff, which is both Klopp and Pep Linders, is that for them it's about winning pretty remorselessly, pretty ruthlessly. In my opinion, it's quite clear, without denigrating Real Madrid, the side that Liverpool would most enjoy facing and would have a higher likelihood of beating is Real Madrid rather than City. It's been clear over several battles now that City have some of the kryptonite Liverpool don't like. They never lie down. And the degree to which analytically they know each other intimately says that if Liverpool play in a putative final, which is the hypothesis you've thrown up against Real Madrid, they've got one thing which in sports psychology terms is good. This is a revenge factor. And again, having interviewed both Trent Alexander and Andy Robertson on this subject of the Real Madrid game, revenge would be a very, very high extra motivation if in your hypothetical final in Paris between Real Madrid and Liverpool. Revenge for Kiev is what I'm talking about. Beyond that, we are in a phase, you both know it, in La Liga, whereby as high quality technically, as high quality tactically as it is, and beautifully still entertaining for my taste, there is a difference between a really elite English side on top Premier League side on superpower form and the best in La Liga in terms of just power play, tempest play. Now, not English sides can't always manage that against Real Madrid. The first leg against Chelsea was small proof of that. The gap's narrowed over the last year, whereas Atleti and Real Madrid last year were very pale opponents for Chelsea, for example. The gap's changed a little bit. Madrid are much closer. But I think that Liverpool would be absolutely clear that in a final against Real Madrid, they'd be much freer to play just exactly with no nuances, no extra details, exactly to the template of how they like to play best at really high speed with and without the ball. And they would feel that they could probably put Real Madrid to the sword. And with Real Madrid this season in the Champions League, it's all been about their opponents finishing. Mm-hmm. So in Paris, had they lost 3 or 4-0, really, genuinely, nobody could have complained. Had they been 3-0 down before Real Madrid scored at home to Paris Saint-Germain, particularly Mbappe chances, nobody could have complained. By the time that Mondi makes a mistake for Chelsea at 2-1, I think it is, Chelsea are on the rise again. Real Madrid are conceding chances. Courtois is keeping them in it. Ultimately, 3-1 is really beautiful. In the Bernabeu, Chelsea could have been 5 or 6-0 up by the time Rodrigo scores. And I don't need to explain to either of you or Emery, who watched the game where Pep City looked like, you know, 5-1 winners and came out 4-3. That pattern can't, you know, continue. the history of sport, not just football, tells us that it's really interesting to write about rope-a-dope, fight back stories, the remontada. But if you keep doing that, fortnight in, fortnight out, eventually the knockout blow comes. So if Real Madrid perform as they did away to City at home, then I think they're going out. Have they got the capacity to beat City and go through? Without question, they definitely do. But I think it needs an absolute sea change in their idea of how to press, how to defend, and how to cope with City's movement, which was Real Madrid's undoing.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
On Tuesday night.
Liverpool fans should be desperate that Real win this game because they're miles better than Real compared to, like, Liverpool will be slight outsiders against Man City. I can't for the life of me see how Liverpool, the way they've been, Liverpool are an absolute winning machine and they will face better teams than Real Madrid and win. I couldn't see them.
Yeah, but Jay, let's be finished now. Fair now. In the final, there won't be three teams. So whether they can beat better teams than Real Madrid or not in a two-team final is irrelevant. And the fact is, although I've made a case about which, in answer to Owen's question about which side of Klopp could choose in this hypothetical dream world where you can choose your final opponents, it doesn't mean that Real Madrid are a pushover. That's just daft.
They're miles better than them. They're miles better than Real Madrid. I mean, as you say, Graham, as well. Like the chances they've coughed up against Chelsea.
I think you're wrong about that. I think that, for example, when they went into the Champions League in Madrid, Liverpool ostensibly should have been miles better than Tottenham. And it was a stuffy game where nerves took over, tiredness took over. And what's more, the fact, what I'm arguing is different to you in that, and I swear that my analysis, at least of Real Madrid, is spot on. The fact is, Real Madrid are an extraordinary bunch of characters with world-class talents who don't particularly like the style that Liverpool play at their best. Mm. Now, looking for a quadruple after a long season and at the moment being on absolute top power form against Villarreal, but not last weekend, for example, and projecting forward to a 28th May final in Paris, that's a really different perspective. And if you were trying to sell in this hypothesis to Klopp and his staff and his players in the 2-3 days before a Paris final against Real Madrid, don't worry, you're miles better than them. You know, they'd smack you in the face.
Yeah, thankfully I'm not the Liverpool manager, but yeah.
the job coming up in a year or two.
Yeah, there we go.
What is it about these Champions League semi-finals, Graham, that have given us some unbelievable, like, historically good games over the last 5-6 years? Like, and I'm talking about choosing it, obviously, rather than last night. Like, for me, and this maybe just come from not having watched enough of Ancelotti's Real Madrid, but I was a little bit surprised that Pep versus Ancelotti threw up an all-time classic on Tuesday.
I understand what you mean, except it's literally almost throughout the decades that we've been alive and we've been working in this business, you could throw Madrid in a knockout tie and you'd be almost guaranteed that whether they went through or not, it would be knockabout. There would be ultra drama. They don't live to be a Rolls Royce team. They live to win, come hell or high water, no matter how it happens. And sometimes when they don't win, it's ultra, you know, spectacular. And what is it about these semifinals? The one thing I'm absolutely sure about is that during my working lifetime, the Champions League has homogenized football in terms of every single player of any worth whatsoever. By the time he, because we're talking about the men's game at the moment, is 21 or 22, treats flying to Berlin or flying to Lisbon for a Champions League match the same as they would treat being on a bus for 45 minutes to go to a away game in the Premier League, in your case in UK and Ireland, or here in La Liga. Travel's the same, food's the same. You're shepherded around by, you know, ultra clever people from your club who cuss at you. The pitch qualities are all the same. Everything is filmed. The referee qualities in the Champions League, the disparity between one and the other and his interpretation or a good night and a bad night is much smaller than you might find in a domestic league. It's as easy now in the Champions League in terms of everything apart from how good your opponent is to play the same away as you play at home. And that's been inculcated into coaches and physical preparators and players now since, you know, the early 90s. And as such, what happens is we get the complete reverse of what the European Cup was before. And for my money, it's a terrible idea to get rid of away goals. We haven't seen the damage yet. Some might say Atleti at City, some might say Villarreal last night, but I promise you it wasn't their tactic to play like that. I think the away goals rule is a terrible idea to get rid of it. But, you know, over the Champions League years, what we've seen is a re-education of everybody's mind in football that you play away to win. And that gives you your 4-3s and your 3-0, 4-0s. It's just, for my money, despite all the hullabaloo about Super Leagues and about Seferin talking about completely rejigging the way that the semi-finals and final are played, where they're played, you know, what time scale. For my money, the Champions League, including the World Cup, has been the greatest football competition ever invented.
So why are they talking about getting rid of the two-legged semi-finals?
Well, because the villagers have got pitchforks and torches and they're storming the Baron's castle, I think. UEFA are obviously... They don't feel threatened. They do feel aware that the Super League caught them completely by surprise. I promise you that. They were caught completely by surprise. And that has given them time to go back and lick their wounds and think, well, what do we do in order to, if I use the phrase buy off, it sounds a little pejorative, but in order to give the leading clubs, who are the participants, so they're, what's the modern term, lads? Are they stakeholders? should we fly that the flagpole and say, oh, yeah, that kind of shit. The bottom line is that they're looking to rejig because they've been forced to. In my opinion, it's unnecessary. Minor modifications in a tournament, trying with like with the Champions path to make sure that clubs of quality from leagues with lower coefficients get a shot at group football. Because in group football with six matches, if you're good enough, you should go through. Yes, I'd like to see representation from smaller countries with lower budgets in their clubs and lower coefficients. That's an amendment that the Champions League could be making. The idea about making, which has been pushed at the moment, a sort of final four, semi-finals played on, you know, one day rather than two legs, played in a host city with it. It's nicking from North America. There's the long and short. It's happening because big clubs are saying we want more control, we want more money, we want less jeopardy, and the way that UEFA think they can respond is via rejig, which was already in their minds for the, I think, 24-25 season. Now this idea, they clearly are throwing up to see what the public, see what the media, see what the industry will say about it, this final four in one city and no semifinals home and away as we know it. For my taste, it's unnecessary change. Just 5 years hence, when we're talking, 6 years hence, when we're talking about, we may all be totally in love with it. It may feel like, you know, a basketball final or an NFL final. I don't know, but it's change that we don't need.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Graham Hunter, great stuff. Thanks a million.
See you, lads.
Cheers. Graham Hunter there on the line from Spain. This is just a bad idea, right? For me, the semi-finals have been, and the quarterfinals to a lesser extent, it's just been the best part of the club football calendar over the last few years.
It's a complete misnomer as well, like, because it's not a Champions League when you've teams who finish fourth and teams who finish third. I mean, and I nobody'd probably agree with me with the way it is now, but like in the old days where the European Cup and champions played against each other, there was a beautiful kind of tradition to that, and the winners played the winners of different countries, and the winner from Ireland might end up drawing Liverpool back in the day. And now it's obviously it's bloated, and as Graham says, the Super League compel them to look at where they're going. But
well, if you had just champions only, then you wouldn't have, one of Manchester City or Liverpool wouldn't be in the semi-finals of.
They wouldn't. They shouldn't be in it because it's not. That's not a Champions League. Champions League is the champions. Like you didn't. You're not champion of anything by finishing fourth.
I know, but it used to be called the European Cup.
Yeah, like, but it's not. It shouldn't be called a Champions League, for example. But like, so I, if we had a better second tier competition than the Europa League or whatever, that'd be fine. But anyway, that's not going to change. So that's by the by. But like, footballers already have far too many games, and I don't think the powers that be give a crap about that. I don't think they give a damn about you know, the challenges that footballers have in terms of keeping up their fitness, keeping up you know, their form and all that. I don't think they care about that. But why would you tinker with it, as they say, to the extent of these whole cities nonsense and all that? Like I despair, and you know, maybe we don't care about people going to games anymore. We want people watching on TV and streaming and so on, and more and more money. But I don't know. I mean, in fairness, the two-legged semi-finals are great entertainment.
We were chatting earlier on, if you're just joining us, about Johnny Ward's hatred for social media. He just wants to get rid of Instagram, wants to get rid of Twitter. Hates people with their hates people out with their phones, put their phones out at matches. Luke Keeney has been in touch to say, Johnny's some man to talk about taking photos on Instagram, posting about €5 tomatoes in Harold's Cross.
$5.25 actually. Yeah. Oh no, I'm a complete and utter hypocrite on this. Like, I'm a complete and utter hypocrite on everything. I was even off Instagram and went back on it, and I'm just as much of a dolce as I was beforehand. But phones completely take over your life. If you've in any way an addictive personality, which I do, your phones will take over your life. But I don't. The one way I'm not hypocritical, and I hope you're the same if you're a beloved carrier plane, I do not take my phone out to take photos of the opposition player celebrating a goal against me, and I never will.
No, I'm too bitter.
Shoot me if
I
do.
I'm just too bitter to do that. Maybe they're just more mature people than we are, and they're like, we can appreciate the opponents, whereas maybe we're too tribal.
Well, we're tribal, but we also want to watch the game, and yeah, you know, and it's a massive challenge as well for people watching. The average fella or girl who watches a sporting event at home now probably spends possibly 10% of the 90 minutes on his or her phone.
Yeah.
That's not good. I mean, that's just, and it's totally, totally addictive.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. We all do it. €5 tomatoes. €5.25 tomatoes is a disgrace, though. So you were right.
It was one of those situations where there's your pride, because you don't really take much notice of the per kilogram price that's written down on. So you're like, the tomatoes are weighed, and then it's like €5.25. And I was like, I can't like not pay for this now, can I? Because you know, I'm purportedly middle class, so I'm going to say, oh, that's fine, while saying to myself, I'm never going here again.
Purportedly middle class Johnny Ward, I like, it's got a ring to it. Up next we have Tommy Welch on this weekend.
Purportedly middle class Tommy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'll get a second that.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.